looking for sooty grouse up some logging roads. They are a huge network with so many nodes.
Thank you for tuning into Hannah and Eric Go Birding, a podcast by birders for birders.
I'm Hannah and he's Eric.
We created this podcast to share adventures, sometimes misadventures, and opinions that we have on different birding topics. We're definitely not experts. Anything that we discuss that might be controversial, I want you to remember their own opinions, and they might be different from yours.
Well, I feel like the elephant in the room is the ivory-billed woodpecker situation. And if you're not...
Is it the ivory-billed woodpecker in the room? Is that
I wish. So if you... I feel like I've primarily seen all of this stuff about ivory-billed woodpeckers on Twitter. Not so much Facebook.
Yeah, there's been a couple things on Facebook
about as much. But Twitter, you know, it's like really fast-paced and things are happening really quickly and a lot of conversations. So I think that's pretty much the place where people have those kind of conversations. Anyways, so what I'm referring to is that there's been just one article out recently, or I feel like a couple.
I think it's just one came out this year.
It seems like every year or so that there's a new potential ivory-billed woodpecker sighting.
Yeah, and so normally it kind of seems like the MO of the internet that every single time one of these comes out, a lot of people get really angry that people are devoting time and money and stuff like that to the trying to find a bird that in all likelihood, I want to believe, but in all likelihood is probably extinct. It sucks. It's horrible. I still believe, but you know, I'm not going to go chasing after it because, you know, it would be awesome.
You have a job.
I have a job. But like realistically, like the way I look at it is back in the early 1900s, people got videos and pictures of this bird easily. Mm-hmm. Like it was not an uncommon bird to get photos. It was easy to capture. It was large.
Gregarious.
It was gregarious. So for it to continue to go unseen is probably, So... all likelihood doesn't exist, but I don't think it's right to disparage people for holding out that hope and spending time, effort, and money trying to find it, because my opinion is a lot of the money and time spent trying to find this would not be spent on other conservation. Like people that are trying to reinforce the jack pine forests up in the Midwest, it's not taking money away from that. My opinion of the whole thing is that the people that are looking for the ivory billed are a different subset of birders and conservationists as opposed to the people that are doing other work. And there's obviously some spillover of trying to conserve the old growth and stuff, or what's left of the old growth down in the swamps of Louisiana, Florida, and Mississippi. But I don't know. I think it's just wrong to just continue to disparage these people that are spending that time trying to go out and take photos. And you build quite a bit of false hope, but.
Well, so I believe, you know, I want this species to exist so bad. But you know, I of course believe it likely doesn't still occur. It's probably extinct. But you know, I also believe that Bigfoot is going to be found any day now, because I just want to believe so bad. And because we live in Oregon, you know, the home of Bigfoot.
Yeah, they're here. They're out there. Sure.
So, your grandfather saw one.
That's what he says.
So anyways, I do hope that, you know, someday that we will have proof of it, like irrefutable, like solid proof, like obviously not a dead one that somebody finds, but like good images of one. I hope. And you know, the fact that it keeps coming into popular culture or, you know, the media, I think that helps birders because it shows people that there's still things out there that we haven't discovered. Like, I mean, they discover new species, maybe not bird species, but new species like regularly.
Well, and they refine bird species, especially in like the deep Amazon and stuff like that all the time. So it's not completely unreasonable. And then it does, like you said, it brings it back to the forefront of the rest of the world that isn't following so heavily, the rest of the world that can't identify the difference between an ivory billed and a pileated. It brings that to the forefront and creates those discussions of people that are like watching Good Morning America or USA Today or whatever shows or reading whatever magazines they're reading. It brings that out, and it can it can inadvertently lead to some things and spark some interest in what the heck is an ivory-billed woodpecker and why are people looking for that sort of thing. And I see there's unintended benefits from people continuing to do research with this. It's not all negative, and I feel like people seeing all the disparaging comments on the internet about it is very disheartening, because I think of birders as a welcoming community, and to see that pretty regularly is kind of frustrating.
I mean, I do agree that there was an article recently that had a picture of a pileated, and it was like, could this be the missing ivory billed, when it was obviously a pileated. Yeah. And I wish the reporter would have done more due diligence to correct that. But still, I mean, I think education over just like yelling at people.
It doesn't get you anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the ivory-billed woodpecker.
So. Yeah, so we'll include an article in the show notes about it if you want to check it out for yourself, but I believe...
Yeah, so this episode, we were going to be talking about the Global Big Day.
Yep.
But we're still kind of waiting on the results, putting some stuff together. So we are going to postpone that for another 2 weeks. But in the meantime...
Still send us in your stories.
Yes.
Yeah, so we have more time to collect your stories. If you meant to send yours to us or, didn't realize that we were asking for that. So what we want you to do is to send us your Global Big Day story from May 13th when we all had the Global Big Day.
Back when we all did that thing.
Yeah, a couple weeks ago. So we want you to, you can write it out, you can email it to us. We've had people message us on Facebook with their story, or you could send us a voice recording. So we did try WhatsApp. It did not work because I already have a different WhatsApp phone number. So you can just give this phone number a call and leave a voicemail, and it is, get your pens ready. It is 503-468-6901, and we'll also put that in the show notes too. So like I said, give it a call and give us a voicemail about what your big day was like.
Okay, so Hannah, you had a couple episodes that are going to be coming out. You've recorded some of them, you're getting ready to record other ones for the next month. What do you got on docket?
I know, I kind of like, with adding this new podcast, kind of like screwed up the whole cycle of how we talk about it. But what I have waiting for you for the rest of the month. So Women Birders Happy Hour, I am excited to interview. I haven't done it yet, so I'm sure it'll be great though. A Delhi-based birder. Her name is Neetu Das, and I'm very excited to chat with her, and that episode will come out June 8th and see what kind of fun cocktail we can create with a bird. And then towards the end of the month on June 22nd will be an episode of the Bird Nerd Book Club. And that one, I did do the interview already. Very excited about releasing this because it's a super cool book. It is 101 Curious Tales of East African Birds by Colin Beale, published by Pelagic Publishing. Man, that is a lot of peas. But yeah, that was a really fun chat. Check it out on June 22nd. Even if you've never been to Africa or if you never intend on going to Africa, I think the stories that Colin includes in the book are just fun for anybody.
Awesome. Well, I'm looking forward. I didn't take part in either one of these, so I'm looking forward to hearing about East African birds. But in the meantime, probably before I get a chance to listen to it, we will be doing some travel.
Yes.
We are going to be going to the Global Bird Fair in a couple of, I guess it's a couple of months still.
Yeah.
But it's coming up in the middle of summer here. We are going to be doing a podcast booth where we'll be interviewing some people, which
we're still working on arranging all that.
We haven't arranged who we're interviewing yet. We have some fantastic ideas, and I can't wait to hear back from them. But we're going to be doing that in July.
And there's also with the Global Bird Fair, we're planning on putting together a Women Birders Meetup. So
Yes. If
you're going to Global Bird Fair, details will be announced as soon as I have figured them out. So I hope you can join us for it.
Yeah, and so we're still tentatively scheduled for doing the International Conference for Women Birders in Uganda in December.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the end of the year. And then some things that are coming up next year. Spring Chirp has announced their dates.
Yes, and we did Spring Chirp a couple years ago. Yes. It was just such a blast. It's, you know, a boutique festival in the Rio Grande Valley in the spring. We had so much fun, and, you know, we're excited to be going back again this April.
Have we been invited?
She texted you.
Oh, well, okay.
She told me to.
Well, we haven't asked for the time off yet. She did send us a save the date.
I already announced it on the podcast. So yeah.
Oh, so it's done.
Yes, done deal.
This is your time off request. Your PTO request right now. Okay. So also in 2024, at the end, Hannah has been working with Birding the World. Is that the name of the
Birding is the World?
Birding
Brazil.
Is the World. Brazil.
Yeah. So we met. We met Maida in the Rio Grande Valley this last year in November, mm-hmm. and she has a company called Birding is the World Brazil. She is Brazilian, and she lives in the U.S., but she does tours down to Brazil. She's actually a wildlife biologist. Yeah. So I think it's cool to learn, go out with folks who have that kind of career, because you get, like, such a different experience.
Yeah.
Going with a tour guide is great as well. I mean, everybody has their own skill set. And maximizes on that. But I'm so happy to be joining her in September 2024 for a Amazon birding expedition for women. So I think there's 8 slots on the trip. Should be a really fun experience. It's, I think, 11 or 12 days. I'll put it in the show notes so you can check it out if you'd like to. But we'll be going throughout some really incredible places in Brazil and seeing the Pink River dolphins. So even if you're not super birdie, you know, there'll be stuff for everybody.
Yeah. So I guess I'm going to have to book my own trip for...
You'll be doing a
September.
Different trip.
Yeah. I'll have to go somewhere else fun.
You'll cover my job.
Oh, is that? I'll work here for you. Okay. All
right. So that brings us to our June Bird Nerd giveaway.
Yes. This is an extended Bird Nerd giveaway because, as Hannah has pointed out to me, we have 3 episodes in June. So we will give a reminder during the next episode that it's still going on. And then at June 27th, we will have the deadline. So... What we're doing this month, we are giving away a Sibley Birders trivia card game. So,
and that just came out in May.
Yes, it just came out. Super cool. It's basically Trivial Pursuit without the rest of the board. So it's lots and lots of questions. We went through a whole bunch of them. There's some base level things that are really easy if you're just kind of a beginner birder, and then there's some really tough ones in there as well. So it was kind of really interesting to go through it and see, test ourselves. And I think I did about 50%
intermediate
skills. So it's got questions for every birder ability. So that's really awesome.
And so it's from the best-selling author and ornithologist, David Allen Sibley, who many of us have a book or two of his on our bookshelves.
Yes. And so what we want you to do is to send us your favorite bird trivia fact. That you could phrase it as a question you want to ask us, or if you just want to send it and give us the answer too. I don't know. But the deadline is June 27th. So send that to us through all the different social medias, send it to our email, however you'd like to get us that information, and then we'll get you entered in for a random drawing to win this Sibley Birders Trivia, a card game.
So, sooty grouse.
Yes.
This is a species that I have wanted to see for a while. It's not, I wouldn't call it a nemesis because we haven't, like, gone out specifically looking for it. We really haven't even gone to the places where there's, like, a lot of sightings. But it's a species that I have seen so many people post on social media because, you know, Pacific Northwest, yeah. And people are out birding. And apparently they are pretty out there. So you get to see them. I mean, walking across the road, apparently.
Apparently, I don't know. So it's so weird. I'll see people have pictures of them on the side of the road, and then anytime I talk to somebody about them, they're like, oh yeah, you never see them.
Yeah, I heard it.
Like, so which is it?
Who's taking these pictures?
Are people taking pictures of these birds in perfect light standing on the side of the road, or do you never see them? It can't be both. The bird can't be both.
So I think grouses are some of the most understated birds.
Is it grease? Sooty grease.
I'm just talking about grouses? Like all grouses.
Grouse. Oh, grouse. I don't know.
Okay.
The plural of grouse.
You're a ding dong.
Grouses.
That would be a good trivia fact that someone should send to us. How to properly just say a
to properly pluralize grouse.
Yeah. So anyways, back on track.
Anyways.
I think grouse are some of the most understated birds. You know, like, they're big, they're random, they're kind of derpy, they like show up unannounced and in random places that I wouldn't expect to see them,
and they're so sneaky. Somehow they're so sneaky, you end up, like, we've had it happen dozens of times where we happen upon the ruffed grouse,
yeah,
where we're just walking the trail, see nothing, And then all of a sudden, as we came upon it and it, and we still don't see it. We just
and then
see
you have to change your pants.
Yeah. We see a flush of movement off to the side of the trail because we walked within like 5 feet of this bird and it flushed, but we just didn't see it because it's in the trail. It's in the bushes next to the trail. But it's just there. You just happen upon them.
So sooty grouse, they are actually the third largest grouse species in North America, and that's behind Greater and Gunnison's sage grouse. So it's a pretty good sized bird. Mm-hmm. They like to spend their days foraging on the ground for plants and insects and also for leaves, needles, and buds and trees, which I always like really hesitate when I hear like a bird likes to eat needles.
It's like, well, it's the soft needles, like the spruce trees. Like you can see it, like especially the spruce trees behind the hotel here.
Yeah.
That like this time of year especially, that it's obvious that that 1 inch at the end is all brand new growth from this year, and it's just 1 inch of all soft needles that are like, I mean, I eat them.
Just nothing I'd about it seems palatable. It's always surprising.
You're just not daring enough. You just need to go out and try some needles.
Well, I think people make like tea out of spruce needles.
I think so.
Okay, we'll have to try that.
I don't know. I'm going to Google it first because it might be poisonous. I'm not going to start just cooking and eating something without checking it out first.
Here, try these mushrooms that I found on
the ground. Yes.
And so,
that's how you end up having your last episode of Ann and Eric O'Brien. Yeah,
right. So in the spring, somebody's going to send us mushrooms.
Oh, jeez.
So in the spring, males perch on trees and make short flights and strut their stuff on the ground for females. So that's kind of what we were hoping to see.
Yes, we were hoping.
Those males out calling, you know, being loud and trying to attract females to them. And they live in mountain and coastal coniferous forests where there are adequate openings, which fortunately for us is a lot of what the habitat is where we live.
Yeah, so we looked up, we used eBird, our favorite resource, to try to figure out what the heck we want to go see, where we want to see it, and when. And we found a bunch of different spots. So fairly close by St. Helens National Forest, near Mount Rainier, there were some sightings, Multnomah Falls region. So these were all places. It was a full day, most of a day to get there. So it was probably going to be like a 2 day trek, like get there, bird the next morning, and then come back. Mm-hmm. Or leave super early and try to bird that day, and then so it was going to be kind of an extended 1 or 2 days. So we were like, well, we don't know if we're gonna have time. We're getting close to the end of breeding season. We want to at least hear them calling. We want to hear them singing. And I feel like we're at the end of May now, so it's kind of pushing it to keep hearing birds out there singing, trying to establish territories and get mates and stuff. But it's not late enough to see the females, which I'd read online that the females in the late summer can be found on the sides of roads with the chicks.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Walking around. So maybe we'll try that, but they won't be the breeding plumage males that'll be doing that. Yeah. So it'll still be grouse walking around, which could be super cool.
Well, and if you haven't had a chance, like go check out videos of males. Mm-hmm. Because they have like these bear patches on
yellow
their...
Yeah. Patches. It's just...
Well, and it has like feathers that like kind of radiate out. Mm-hmm. From that too. It's very, I mean, all grouse are really interesting looking birds. That's,
oh, yeah.
So I feel like they're understated. I feel like people just don't really talk so much about grouse.
Yeah. They're very odd.
They're odd.
They're odd in a good way.
Yeah.
But so we were like, okay, well, we don't really have time to go take a 2 day trip somewhere. Mm-hmm. Right now. We don't, we can do like a morning somewhere, and there's a logging road fairly close to us. It's called McGregor Road. That has a whole bunch of sightings, usually in the spring, and it's usually in the early spring. So we're a little bit late still for that. Like, I think the latest that they were reported was like the 20th or something like that of May. And mm-hmm. We were looking on like the 26th or something. And so it was like, okay, well, this is already a little bit late. All the sightings are all earlier than this on this particular road. Well, in past years too.
And I always have hesitation with like going to a logging road and birding for a specific bird because mm-hmm. like they're so long, you know? Yeah. And I don't know if like the people's eBird list, if like it'll say three miles in like 2 hours or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that means they hiked up into the logging area or if they're driving and making a list at the same time. I feel like there's never like good information about what people are doing, which makes me think that you and I need to keep better notes.
We probably do need to put better notes on the. I'll go back and adjust the list. Put some more notes on what exactly we did for that.
Well, just the overall list notes.
Yeah. But
luckily, St. Helens and Multnomah and those places, like I feel like it's pretty obvious what people are doing, because they'll
it'll be a trailhead.
Yeah, exactly.
And it'll be like, okay, they hiked that trail.
Yeah.
And they were out there for 4 hours or whatever time frame that they have on there. So those lists, it was pretty clear that it's listed at a trailhead and then they just go hike the trail.
Exactly.
And so somewhere on that trail is where they found it. So that you kind of have an idea. You're not going to travel very far, very fast.
At least I know what I'm getting into in advance.
Yeah. And the logging roads are a little bit different, but luckily we know one of the birders that goes out almost every year and sees them out on this road. So I gave her a call and I was like, hey, Diana, what do you do? what is McGregor Road? How do you bird it? And what do I need to know before going out there? Because I don't know. Yeah. We've driven past this road 1,000 times. It's on the way back and forth from Portland for us. If we ever have to go up to Portland for anything, we drive past it and we see it all the time. And so she gave us a bunch of intel, which we'll explain through as we go through our day here. But it was awesome. Great information. And I can't thank Diana enough because she
got us our grouse.
She got us grouse. So this network of logging roads that Hannah was talking about, how it's just extensive, is there's thousands of miles.
That whole section is huge.
Oh, yeah. Well, and they're all huge. It's just this one is a very well-developed. McGregor Road itself is a very well-developed trunk road that has tons of roads that spur off of it. And we just stayed on the main road, just like Diana told us to. But there's all sorts of spurs that go here and there, and then they go back out and then come back and connect. And so there's lots of habitat and lots of different ages of stands of trees.
Yeah.
So if anybody's not familiar with logging in Oregon, it's been going on a very long time.
Yeah.
Like, people have been logging out in the coastal range for a very long time. And most of this time, people have been replanting. It's fairly recently in the last, I don't know, was it like 30 years, 40 years? It's been a mandate that they have to replant. But before that, people were generally replanting anyways, because it's a renewable resource. It's a renewable resource, and you want to renew it by planting it. And you don't want to be a jerk and cut it all down and then just run away, because that doesn't do anybody any good, especially if you own the land.
Yeah.
So lots of different ages. Much of it is monocultured. So it'd be big, long stands of spruce, big, long stands of hemlock, a lot of fir, mostly Douglas fir in most of the places. But there is some variability depending on which roads you're on and where you're at. But it's just big, huge. And some of the older stuff it's not old growth anymore, but some of it is pretty old.
It seems to be like those sections seem to be pretty good habitat. I mean, from our semi-knowledge of habitats and how they function, I mean, like, it has really good hydrogeography, mm-hmm. or hydrogeology.
Hydrogeography.
Yes. Sure.
it's like water maps.
The mapping of water, yeah. But, like, a diversity of species of tree and also mm-hmm. undergrowth and some of those old sections, too. So,
yeah.
I mean, like you said, it's not old growth, so, like, not necessarily marbled murrelet habitat.
Yeah, and the spotted owls have been pretty much decimated because of the activities out there and stuff like that, but there is still other stuff out there, and it's not a desert of nothing. There's quite a bit of life and quite a bit of habitat out there.
Oregon does have some of those sections, like that poplar farm that you drive past in the gorge. I mm-hmm. mean, there's nothing but poplars.
Oh, it's just it's literally rows of trees,
but that are all the same age. I guess there's some up here too, like Svensson. There's some poplar farms up there too.
Up in that area, there's some poplar farms. But yeah, a lot of this is the native Douglas firs, hemlocks, and spruces that are being grown for different reasons, mostly to be regrown, just to be cut down.
Yeah.
But they grow them for like 50 years before they go back and cut them down. So it's a chunk of time that habitat gets to grow up and do its thing.
Well, and it's such an interesting landscape to look at. Like, one place that we were sitting at was an overlook of a valley,
mm-hmm.
and you could see, like, it's a patchwork of, like, old, new, completely flattened, and then, like, old.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're...
It's not pristine habitat.
It's not, by any means. But it's semi-contiguous. It's
habitat. Yeah.
And so, like, I feel like there's a huge trade-off, you know, because we need resources for all of these things. Of course, we try to be better stewards of our environment
and use less and all that,
but there's still resources people need for houses and writing. And there's a lot of uses for timber.
Yeah.
Obviously. But that's
all to say that this is extensive. There is so many roads out there, and some of these roads date all the way back to the early 1900s and 1800s. of just like, they just keep getting rebuilt and reinforced. So that's like what McGregor Road is one of those old trunk lines that has been used and used and used and used and used for decades. And so it's a well-established road that goes up through there, but it is a logging road. So during the week, especially in the fall and winter, the spring, it's a little bit kind of going, but logging is happening and you have log trucks after log trucks after log trucks. So if you do go out to logging roads, be aware that you can't block gates. If you block a gate, you might get your vehicle towed and it'll be gone. If you can drive through the gate, make sure that it's probably best to do on a weekend when the logging operations are significantly less, and always be aware that if possible, have a CB that's got, tune into channel, whatever is on the sign, which where we were at was channel 3 and channel 5, but, make sure you're safe.
Well, and also,
because logging trucks, they're there for a job. They're there to drive back and forth, and you're on their job site as soon as you're on a logging road.
And also, you know, research the location in advance to make sure you don't have to have a permit. Because
that's true. Some do
need
permits.
There are a lot of places around where we're at that require a permit for recreation. It's a free permit, mm-hmm. and you just have to put it in your car, you know, and you just register, like, I am here. And that's just so...
And it's indicating that you read the rules of the area.
Yeah. Well, and their private property too. Mm-hmm. So they just want to be aware of who's using their property.
Yeah. Yeah. So all of that, again, all that's to say that we went out on logging roads. It was not a logging day. So there was nothing going on. There was a shooting range fairly close by. So we were hearing people popping off for most of the day, but it was, they're at a range that was a couple miles away.
Yeah. So we went to the spot that Diana had, mentioned, mm-hmm. and that's about 3 miles in. Fortunately, there were mile marker signs throughout the property.
So, a well-established logging road. It has mile markers all over it. Yeah.
Yeah. So we knew when we got to 3 miles, and there was this kind of flattened area with a recently logged area that was uphill from us, and then downhill was like older forest.
Yeah, it was 30 or so years old probably.
Yeah.
And so we stood there, we were hearing tons of stuff. We had,
oh my gosh,
band-tailed pigeons, hermit warblers, Wilson's warblers,
Western tanager right on the top of one of the trees near us.
Hairy woodpecker calling on and on.
It flew over.
Yeah. So lots of biodiversity, lots of birds doing their bird thing. And what we were standing at was a habitat edge. So we talked about this a little bit in our Columbia episode, but the habitat edges, these roads that go through, are really good because birds are transitioning from one habitat type to another, or they're crossing over between a road, which is like a desolate section in the middle of the bisects habitat. So it's not great for contiguous habitat, but it's good for birding because it gives you an open place for you to see the birds going back and forth. Mm-hmm. So lots and lots of birds, but no grouse. It was very quiet on the grouse front. Couldn't see anything, but we also
Quiet on the grouse front.
So we decided we're going to go a little bit further. So we went about a quarter mile further, and I saw this perfect pull-off. It was a pull-off on the side. It was, their uphill was still the recently logged and replanted area. And then downhill from us, the elevation we were at, the hill was steep enough that we were standing at the tree tops. Mm-hmm. And it was going down. You could see into the valley. You could see mid and upper canopy of all the trees. And so I was like, this will be perfect. Let's pull over here. We pulled over, and still lots of hairy woodpeckers. We had some Canada geese fly over. A rufous hummingbird was buzzing us back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And I was like, okay, well, I'm not seeing anything.
Yeah.
And it's a long ways down that hill. So I wonder, I wanted to remind myself, what does this bird sound like? So I played the city grouse call to myself. We don't play calls out because that's not great. It's, especially in breeding season, you distract them from what they're doing. Played it to myself, and it was a that they make, and as soon as I stopped playing it, put my phone away, I was standing there listening, and then we could both hear at the bottom of the canyon, and we'd been hearing it the whole time. I just didn't realize
they're so low pitch too.
The engine has to be off, you have to be very quiet, especially because this one was quite a ways away. It's probably a quarter mile, maybe a half mile away.
I think it got a little closer at one point in time.
I think it did, yeah. But it's just, I tried to record it, and it is the frequency, like I didn't know the frequency or anything like that until I recorded it. And then I was able to find it. I could see it on the spectrogram that it's between 50 and 75, maybe 100 hertz at the most. And it is, it's a very...
Give us a frame of reference for what that means.
It's my voice, like there, the is probably pretty close to the pitch that we're listening to. Okay. And it's not a very loud sound either. The birds obviously know what they're listening for, so they hear it, but it's not something that we can hear very well. And it was a good distance away, so like the raindrops falling on the microphone were too loud, and the raindrops you could hear on the needles around us and on the gravel were too... It was just misty too. It wasn't a full rain. That was too much, and it overwhelmed the being able to record it.
That's
so
funny.
I didn't really get a recording of it. You could see it. I could see it in the spectrogram, and I could hear it when I maxed the volume out and I like concentrated really hard and I watched the spectrogram. I could see it. And I could, so did not get a great recording of it. I don't think I think I'm too embarrassed to even post it anywhere. I don't even think I'm going to put it on eBird. It's like half a star worth of recording.
That's funny.
Zero thumbs up. It's not a good recording at all, but we heard it. It was going on and on and on, and it would not stop. So we got great listens of it for ourselves, not necessarily to share with anyone, but it was a success.
Yeah.
We got it. Could not see it.
Yeah.
it was a ways down.
That's a little disappointing.
the location we were at, I was really hoping. I was like, oh, we're up above. We can look down. We can see upper and mid canopy of a lot of those trees down the hill, but still it was...
Heard only. Yeah, but that was super exciting still because I feel like I have a better idea now of what to be listening for, because, I mean, you'd hear their, like, when we listen to it on Merlin or something, you know, we hear their calls and it just doesn't translate as well to me until I actually, like, hear it. Then it's like, you know, now I kind of know what I'm listening for, but then when you hear it actually make the call, it's like, okay,
well,
now I know that's the bird that I was looking for this whole time.
Well, and it's always so different when you listen to a call. And usually, like, a call, like, especially if it's on Merlin or if it's on eBird or if it's on Xenocanto or something, usually people put high-quality audio on there. Mm-hmm. So it's whoever it was able to get relatively close.
Is holding the bird next to the microphone, and it's like...
And they have, like, a big parabola or a big shotgun or something. A shotgun microphone, not a shotgun gun. A shotgun microphone, something, and they can get relatively close, and they can tune out everything else and get just that bird at good volume. And so then it gives you a false sense of what are you going to hear. Because you go to listen to those, and it's like... It's a solid whoop, 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 whoop in the on the eBird, and it's like, oh, okay, cool, we'll hear that. But no, it is much quieter.
At least the one we
heard. The one we heard. But like, I was trying to picture, I think, I'm pretty sure it's that far away. It's a quiet bird.
Yeah.
So you got to take that into consideration too.
So, got it, sort of.
Got it, sort of.
Had more hairy woodpeckers at that spot. Canada geese fly over. Mm-hmm. Rufus hummingbird.
Yeah.
You know, we were feeling good about the progress that we had made. And then we decided to keep going a little bit further. We wanted to try to see if there was a road that went down into the valley. So we could actually see if we can get a different perspective on the bird.
Because it did look like there was a transition of ages of trees down in the valley somewhere. So I was like, there's got to be a road somewhere down there where they're accessing the between those two lots, between those two sections, those plots of trees, but we couldn't find anything. So there may not be anything. It might have just been that's just as far down as they went when they were planting one cycle.
Could be. So we kept on going a little bit further. We got to this huge valley overlook that I mentioned a few minutes ago, where you can see the patchwork quilts of habitat. And that was so cool because we were standing there and I just hear off in the distance, like, "Kier!" You know, like in the old Western movies, like where it's
definitely.
And down in the valley, there was a red tail that was flying through and perched in a tree. And then a moment later, another one came in and perched right next to it. So that was really cool. It's amazing how the sound carries.
Oh yeah. And it carries it's perfect.
Well, you'd think that the trees would absorb it.
Yeah, you'd think so.
But no, it was super loud.
Yeah. And it was clear, just crystal clear, just coming right up the valley.
And there were crows that were chasing them. Yeah. So they put on a pretty good show.
Yeah, so we did a little bit more driving around. We saw spotted towhee, some chickadees, orange-crowned warbler. We saw some additional things. Overall, we ended up with 23 species while we were out there just kind of driving around. And we decided, you know what, we're out here for an hour and a half, 2 hours, or something like that. So it was like, well, let's go get some breakfast. So we headed back into Elsie, which I guess I can't really refer to it as into Elsie. Like,
is there an into Elsie?
I think that is into Elsie.
Okay.
The Elderberry Inn, that's it. Just one restaurant / hotel / gas station.
So I just want to backtrack. So I've been driving from Portland to Cannon Beach my entire life. Mm-hmm. You know, a couple times a year at least. A couple times a month sometimes. Month, yeah. Because, you know, family property out here, family hotel, and then growing up in Portland and everything. And my grandfather made my mother memorize all the different spots along the highway. Mm-hmm. So before cell phones, you know, because there's not a lot of, and even now there's even not, now, a, lot there's cell, no, not cell a lot of cell coverage. So that anytime my mom was doing it and if her car broke down in a certain place, she'd know where to walk to, you know, which direction. And so that's something that my mom always thinks about and she'll like quiz me on. She'd be like, okay, so if your car broke down right here, where would you go?
Are you going east or west?
Yeah, exactly. But anyways, we have driven past the Elderberry Inn 1,000 times at least.
At least.
And yeah. I'll see cars there, you know, looked closed for a while, didn't know what was going on with it. And we went to breakfast there. It was like a bucket list thing, you know?
it's a restaurant with a giant frying pan on the front.
I know. It used to say Elderberry and now it just has an E.
Yeah, the rest of the sign's falling apart.
Yeah. So,
but Elsie is a very small community.
It is.
Out in the middle of the woods / mountains. Not a lot going on, but they have the Elderberry Inn.
Yeah.
And it was good. Yeah. I got the chicken fried steak, or the country fried steak is what they call it. Yeah. But it was good. I liked it.
Had like a...
Just standard breakfast.
Standard breakfast with pancakes, and they had Maryberry syrup, so that was good.
Can't lose with that.
I know. Oregon, Maryberries...
Yeah, so there's a couple places to stop out there. Camp 18 is where most people stop, and that's at the mile marker 18.
Yeah, and we were cutting off before that.
We were going to head off before that, so we were like, well, let's go here instead. We've never been here. So there's a couple options out there for breakfast or lunch, if that happens to be when you're out in the area. But it doesn't seem like, now that we've been to Camp 18 before, this is the first time
we've never eaten at Camp 18. We've just gotten cinnamon rolls
there. That's true. We've only gotten cinnamon rolls there. But I hear Camp 18's good. But either way, I think either one of these spots, depending on where you're at, would be great for breakfast or lunch if you're out there at that time.
A mid-morning
birding meal of some sort. Yeah. So then from there, we got onto, I think it's Highway 202. Maybe not. So. Maybe it's 103. I don't know. But it goes towards Jewel Meadow. So there's it says Wildlife Viewing Area. There's and a big sign for it.
You know you have to go down a road that says Wildlife Viewing Area.
Yeah, it's got a big brown sign. So there's actually a loop, the Clatsop Wildlife Loop.
Which I've lived here how long, and I never even knew that before.
And it's basically Highway 26 out, and then you go up this either 103 or 202. I'm not sure what number it is. you go up this road that goes towards Jewel Meadow, and you go all the way up to Astoria, and then come back down on 101. And that's the loop, and it's a wildlife loop, and there's lots of brown signs along the way to stop and look at things.
Yeah, and so there's this huge field along it that's the elk feeding and viewing area, which I've heard a lot of people go to, but, you know, I've never been because it's off the highway and
we can't make it on the way to anywhere, really, because it's just off. It's off the beaten path, so.
Yeah, so.
We're always going somewhere when we go through there.
Yeah, so Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, they have this really nice parking lot with kind of some educational panels, and they feed the elk there. So you can go out there during feeding time and typically see a herd of elk.
Oh, yeah.
Which is really cool because, you know, we have elk that come through here, through Cannon Beach, and they typically leave and go into the mountains about this time of year, so in the end of spring. And then they'll come back in the mid to late fall down from the mountains. And so you're not necessarily going to see them here right now, but the feeding station at Jewel Meadows, you have a lot higher chance of seeing them.
Yeah. I think they've finished feeding for the season, though. I think they just feed in the spring.
I don't know, because the waitress said, oh, I think they already fed today.
No, she said, I think they're done feeding now. What she said.
Oh, I misunderstood that. I thought she meant like for today.
Oh, no. I think it's done feeding for the season. Gotcha. But either way, it's a really cool place to go. And we went there. There wasn't any elk, but we had a fair number of bird species.
Yeah.
A lot of them were like regular parking lot bantail birds.
We had bantail pigeons. We had a barred owl.
Barred owl there. Barred owl was pretty spectacular. So we spent a few minutes there. It does require a permit you have to get, to park there if you're going to park and go hiking around a bit.
Not entirely sure where to get that permit. So yeah. We just kind of stood near the car.
Yeah. We didn't leave the vehicle. But then we decided, okay, let's move on. We got to get back to work. So let's go. We'll finish the loop and see what else is on this route, on this loop. And the, we found the next sign. It was like 2 miles up the road, Fishhawk Falls, which neither one of us ever knew that there were any waterfalls. And I spent the rest of the day, and I'm still thinking about it, are there any other waterfalls in Clatsop County?
Yeah.
And I'm not aware of any other waterfalls in Clatsop County. There's got to be, though.
Oh, probably. There's probably small ones.
Yeah, there's got to be small ones or something. But this is a fairly substantial. I didn't research specifically the falls, but like standing at the base of it, it's probably 100 feet, 150 feet.
Maybe. But it's, maybe half mile hike in.
Yeah, pretty short
and
hike.
And it's a county park, just empty. Like, we were the only people there. Yeah. It's kind of alongside the highway.
It's so county park, so you don't have to pay. There's no fees or anything like that.
Yeah. So there's a little bit of noise from the highway and mm-hmm. cars on that, but it's a pretty quiet highway anyways.
Yeah, it's
but just,
kind of in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, just really easy hike in. There was like a bridge that we had to cross, mm-hmm. a little bridge, and then got to the falls. We were looking for dippers the whole way because, you know, it's like a coastal stream. Like, maybe there were dippers. I think the water wasn't quite fast flowing or like...
Not like enough water, I think. It kind of seemed like on that verge where it's not quite enough water.
But I was just hoping, like, this would be a secret dipper spot.
It could have been. I mean, it very well could have been.
Well, it could be when the water's flowing.
Yeah, maybe a little bit later in the... Earlier in the season, probably, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
When it rains more.
Yeah.
Earlier in the season.
Early, like February, March, maybe.
Yeah. But really, you know, pretty falls. And we walked, you know, along the river a little bit, or the creek, mm-hmm. I guess. And we had this Pacific Wren that was just, like, screaming in our ear.
Oh, yeah. We had to make a video because there was, like, there's no way that I could make a video and not have this bird interrupt. I think the video got a little bit of traction.
It got
a little bit of traction on there. I mean, it's the, like, literally my thought when you were like, oh, we should try to film this or something. And I was like, well, we could try, but there's no way I'm going to be able to get through anything without the bird interrupting me. And so that's basically what we did. Bird interrupted me, and we got the video. Yeah. So it's out there. You can hear Pacific Wren.
Well, Pacific Wrens are cool.
They are cool.
They have so much to say for such a little bird.
Yeah, one of the longest songs.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. I've been told it's the longest song, but I don't think so. I don't think so. There's got to be other things that are longer.
Probably.
I mean, and this particular individual, the song was not a very long song. I have a recording on eBird that I think the song itself is almost twice the length. So... I'll probably actually use that as the intro or outro music.
That would be a good bird trivia fact, is which bird has the longest song.
The longest song.
Yeah. I think at least Pacific Wren's in the Pacific, or in the
Pacific Northwest. Yeah, North America's probably got to be Pacific Wren. But the, I mean, how do you define that? Is that number of notes? Is that total number of seconds that it's singing?
See, that's the thing. And how many phrases it does in a given time.
Yeah.
Because it could do phrase, 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 and then stop. I mean... What constitutes a song?
Yeah, when does it start and end? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very, very complicated. You got to get into the weeds on that one. Really define the question
before you
get an answer.
Okay, anyways, but it was really nice walking through the county park because, you know, spring is in the air finally after the world's longest, or time's longest spring, mm-hmm. and, or winter, it seems like. And there were lots of salmon berries that were blooming.
Oh, yeah.
The thimbleberries were blooming.
Yeah.
There were a lot of, what were the ground cover that we were talking about? The wood sorrel.
Wood sorrel, yeah.
Yeah.
The wood sorrel and the lily of the Nile and like all sorts of just, it's basically, it just turns into this carpet of green.
Yeah.
Everywhere. It's just a carpet of green with like green drapes and like, like green, like everything is green and it's just. It's a lot of fun to just go into the forest. And like it was also kind of a relief. Like we'd spent the morning on the logging road, which is not pristine. It's like, to be clear, it is not pristine habitat. It can be good habitat, but it's not pristine.
Yeah.
And then to transition down to the Fishhawk Falls County Park, which has been conserved and wasn't an area that was logged, is, and it's just got just native habitat all around, mm-hmm. and the birds are singing, and the literally everything is green. You can't find something that's not green.
Yeah.
The path is covered in moss. the sides of the path are covered in vegetation. So it's pretty awesome.
Well, and you know, it really gave us a good opportunity to bird our county. Like, you guys all who have been listening for a while, I mean, it's like, we're in Israel, we're in here, we're there, in the Rio Grande Valley, Tucson, San Diego. Yeah. We don't get that much opportunity to actually, like, bird our local area in a meaningful way. Like, sure, we'll go out, like, down to Haystack and show people puffins in the morning.
And that's a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, but totally. Or, like, sewage ponds, like, around here, just walk around. But, like, I mean, we just don't get the opportunity to really bird our local area.
Mm-hmm.
And see some of these different places. Like, I mean, I didn't look at Fishhawk Falls to see how many e-bird lists are actually there, but I can't imagine it's very many. Even though it is such a beautiful little spot, and so worth, you know, like the, I don't know, half hour of just exploring it.
Yeah. And not a lot of trails, literally just one trail that goes in and out, and then there's one spur that goes down to the creek again. So that's all there is, and that's all there needs to be. It's, you just get out there and seclude yourself from everything. Even though you're like 500 feet from the road, like, that's not a very busy road. So you have big, long stretches of time where no cars go by.
Yeah.
And you don't even know that the road's there.
Well, so on my Women Birders Happy Hour podcast, I have a question that's like, where do you think every birder should try to go?
Mm-hmm.
And like, I put that question in there. It was kind of selfish because like, I want suggestions of places that I should go. But that's kind of come back to bite me because so many people have answered it and said, like, your local area.
Yeah.
And you should be birding in your backyard. You should be birding in, you know, nearby sites.
Mm-hmm.
And I really was glad we had the opportunity to do that a little bit. I mean, initially we were like, hey, let's go to St. Helens and, like, see the volcano and, you know, try to get sooty grouse on the way and everything.
Which we still need to go up and do that. We still need to go hike the rim.
Yeah, totally. But, you know, I'm glad we had a chance to, like, stay more local and see, like, what our local area really has to offer.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because we get, this time of year, we get so many people that, you know, message us, or I see on Facebook, like, hey, I'm going to Oregon. What should I try to see while I'm out there?
Yeah.
Of course, I'm never going to be like, you should go up this random logging road. Because that's just, I mean, like, if I was like, hey, I'm going to Maine or whatever, and they're like, you should go up this random logging road, it's like, but what about Arcadia National Park?
I mean, there's definitely some cool things we could tell people to do, but like, if you listen to this episode, then you can be like, oh, well, I could probably go bird McGregor now.
Yeah. Or, but, I mean, if folks,
but it's Portland, a longer explanation than just a quick text of go here.
But, you know, it's just to say that there's a lot of really cool places everywhere, and don't overlook your local spots. I mean, McGregor is definitely not on, like, any of those Oregon birding trail stuff. I can't imagine. But it's a really neat spot. And yeah, so is Fishhawk Falls. Oh, yeah. I'm glad.
That was fun. Yeah, so we made our way back and around and went back to work.
And had to stop by Costco.
Had to stop at Costco, get some shopping for the hotel. You would be amazed at how much
the Adventure Mini can hold.
How much the Adventure Mini can hold. So we haven't talked about the Adventure Mini in 40 episodes, but like, we take that for most of our birding trips. Two-door Mini Cooper, hardtop. It's has a little sunroof, so you can see out of the top and see the birds coming at you from above. get some poop land on you or whatever. But you can fit so much. So we bought, let me think of the big things. So we had two cases of water, like the sparkling seltzer water. We had two big packages of paper towels, one of the big Costco packs of toilet paper, the big 40-pound bag of sunflower seeds, and then just a various assortment of coffees and cleaning products that we were buying for the hotel. And that all fits in the back seat. No problem.
And if you haven't, if you haven't listened to our podcast before, we own and operate a hotel. And so that's why we need that much toilet paper and paper towels.
Yeah. We're not hoarding toilet paper and paper towels. It's, no. we go through them pretty quickly, actually. Yeah. it was a major, sense of urgency and pretty significant fear at the beginning of COVID when all of a sudden there was no toilet paper, and it was like, how do we operate our business with no toilet paper?
Oh, it doesn't matter because we're going to be closed anyways.
and then they closed. Yeah. But before that, before we closed, yeah, it was like, all of a sudden we could not get the supplies that we needed to continue operating the business. And it's like, so yeah. Anyways, that's why we got so much toilet paper. That's why the Mini Cooper was so full. But
so anyways, the whole moral of the story is explore your local areas because there could be some really cool bird species.
You might find some grease.
Man,
greases.
Now grease. Our target list is like so low for our county. It's like everything is like 0.05 species or percent, you know, yeah. of lists.
That's, so. I still keep finding things where people will be like, oh, well, I found such and such. It's like, oh, man, I don't have that on my county list. But...
Oh, I'm not county listing.
I'm not really county listing, but I mean, I figure we're here. I might as well see it.
Might as well be number one.
I'm not going to get number one. I'm not going to get close. Anyways, thank you all for listening to our podcast. We hope you enjoyed it and or learned something new. Please, please, please rate, review, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Google Music, and anywhere else you listen to us. If you would like to connect with us on the socials, you can follow us at Hannah Goes Birding and Eric Goes Birding on Instagram. Our Facebook page is Hannah and Eric Go Birding. Our Twitter is at We Go Birding. You can also email us at hannahandericgobirding@gmail.com and check out our website at www.gobirdingpodcast.com. We also have a TikTok, Hannah and Eric Go Birding, but you can share us with everyone, tell us what you hated, tell us what you liked, and best of all, most of all, share us with your friends.